Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
Tonight we have a great passage, repeat of some, new information for others. It is a rehash and a hash of information by which we're supposed to live. Remember, the Proverbs are all about our figuring out how to live a godly life in a dark world. Let's read Proverbs 19 and see how to better live. Contrast, contrast, contrast. It is so black and white in the words of Solomon. And the way to get from the black to the white, to get from the dark side to the light side, to get from living for yourself or living as a fool to living for God and having peace and wisdom, the way to do that is to have the discipline from the Lord. The fear of the Lord was the beginning of wisdom. We learned that way back in the beginning of the text. And here it is in verse 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life. It may not be the very first thing, it may not be the 14th thing, but it's on the way. And it is that which gets us going and is the director or the direction post that helps us know which way to go. So that we can sleep satisfied, untouched by evil. That sounds good to me. And so this is the opposite of cast into the deep sleep, or to the feeling of the lazy man who puts his hand, what does it say? Puts his hand in the dish and can't even bring it back up. That's not the rest of the Lord. That's the laziness of the fool. And there's a big difference. But here it says that the fear of the Lord leads to abundant life, if you will, sleep that's satisfactory, not sleep that's deep because you are doing nothing. It's a very different feeling. All right, well, let's back up to the beginning and see these contrasts over and over again. The poor man and the rich man are contrasted in the beginning of this text, and the rich man always has plenty of friends. The rich man has, and I think if they had inverted commas or quote marks, that they would have used them in those days, but they didn't have them. We have them in modern fonts, but they didn't have them. So I think when Solomon says in verse 4, wealth adds many friends, he would have said, wealth adds many, yeah, sure, friends. But these are simply people who are trying to garner the favor of the rich man and say, ooh, 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 can I hang on with you? I'll be part of your entourage. You go to the red carpet the other night and see Keanu Reeves or Robert Downey Jr., both of whom arrived and had great praise bands, if you will, accompanying them this week. Well, that doesn't mean anybody even knows Keanu Reeves or Robert Downey Jr. It just simply means they want to be around a celebrity. They want to see a star. They're stargazers. They want to be part of something exciting. And if Robert Downey turned and said, hey, come on over. We're going to have a few of us are going to play some cards and get some KFC. Mm-hmm. That'd be so awesome. Wow. And they'd write on their blog, I hung out with Robert Downey, and he gave me $5 to go get some KFC. And woo-hoo, you know, and I think that this idea of friendship that isn't really friendship is that which is foisted by celebrity. When I was in Kansas City, I went to hear a speaker at the mayor's prayer breakfast. This is a wonderful thing that happens all over the U.S. The National Day of Prayer and the National Prayer Breakfasts happen earlier in the year. But this happened in Overland Park, Kansas, my old stomping grounds. And the speaker was the pitcher for the Kansas City baseball team, the Royals. Now, they have many pitchers, but he was the one who had just beaten the New York Yankees the day before, and how exciting it was as he's introduced. And it turns out he's a believer. It was a wonderful testimony he shared, but the people, I think maybe half of them came because he's that fellow, Brian Bannister, from the Kansas City Royals. And at the end, he didn't get up and go shake hands. He didn't get up and go wander around and say hello to the people. He didn't even rush away because he didn't have to. But he sat at his table and signed autographs. And the queue was pretty extensive. Now, there were probably 450 people at the breakfast, and my guess is there were probably 100 people in the queue to get an autograph from this 25-year-old baseball pitcher. I imagine who else is standing there just to rub shoulders with or shake hands with this new friend in the sense of not really friends, and how many were going up to commend the young fellow and say, good on you, mate, because, you know, it's tough to be a celebrity and a believer. But I say all that to say that the first section here of Proverbs 19 is about poverty and wealth, and it's not exactly so clear as Solomon is trying to make it as a divide. Because we have poor people who have a whole lot more money in Australia as poor people than maybe half of the gross national product of small countries. Our level of poverty and their level of poverty is embarrassingly different. You go to a country town in Argentina and tell them that you're poor because, well, you didn't have enough money to go to KFC three times last week, and you didn't have enough money to fly first class, though you flew to Argentina, and you understand. Everybody has a different level, but these principles by which we understand rich and poor are very worthwhile in studying. Tov rash holech betumo. It is better to be a poor man who walks in his perfection. The Hebrew is, in his completion. It's the same word, like Tom, like Tumim, Tamim, that's used of Job, who was complete or perfect in all his ways. And I look at that and think, what is integrity? Someone who walks in his integrity. Do you know the word integrity, what it comes from? Just think back to math class. An integer. And what was an integer, if you remember? Whole number, and even the negative whole numbers. So it's negative 3, negative 2, negative 1, 0, 1, 2, 3. So it's whole numbers, not fractions, not rational numbers, not irrational numbers. It's simply whole numbers. So when he says here, better is a poor man who walks in his whole numbering, it's a call for us, I think, to live as whole people. Complete people, perfect as the Hebrew might be translated, to, at the end of the day, not have done a two-thirds job, not have done a one-half job, but to be complete in yourself. At the end of the day, can you smile and say, yeah, that was a good one? Now, I don't want you to be morose, and I don't want you to be self-afflicting, but I want you to think, I was supposed to do this and that and this, and I did those. And I can feel good about myself. Part of good sleep is good work in the day. Part of bad sleep is incomplete work in the day. So it's better to be a poor man who's complete than one who is perverse in speech and a fool. Funny comparison, really, when you think about it. A poor man versus a perverse man. So it sounds like the perverse man is a rich man, and it sounds like the rich man is a fool. What he's saying is better is a poor man who walks in integrity than anyone who walks in perversity of speech and is a fool. You could have poor men who are living in integrity and poor men who are fools. See, it's not the money. He's comparing integrity and not integrity. Also, Gam below da'at, and also without knowledge, nefesh lotov, the man or the soul, well, that's not good. So a poor man who walks in his integrity also has to be gaining knowledge. Not good for a person to be without knowledge. Now, we know that when we're trying to find our way from one section of town to another, trying to figure out what we're supposed to do at work or in our neighborhood or with our family. We know that knowledge is useful. He's not talking about any specific knowledge. He's talking about general information. And it is so discomforting to be without knowledge. If you don't know which bus it is that you have to take from here to get to Circular Quay, or from here to get to Central so that you can catch the train, so that you can get to, what time does it, I don't know. And when you live in that I don't know, you get frustrated, don't you? Well, I hate that. I hate not knowing. Maybe that's why Google is so exciting. It used to be Ask Jeeves. That was the big pre-Google. You'd ask Jeeves.com, and he'd know everything. Yeah. He was our butler of information, Dewey and Decimal all together. But whether it was a computer information or just not knowing what, remember when you went to a new school, whether it was primary or high school, and you had to figure out who the teachers were, where the rooms were, disoriented you were, and you needed orienting, and how comfortable it was once you knew what uniform you were supposed to wear, where the halls were, where your locker was, where this, that, and the other. And it gives you a sense of peace. And without knowledge, it's not good. That's what he's saying. And he who makes feet haste with his feet errs. I like that. We talked about that some weeks back when we were talking about turn your foot from evil. It doesn't say turn your feet from evil. I appreciate that. That here now, he who makes haste with his feet, the raglayim, so this is plural, this means you're on the move and you're really going. And if you're in a hurry, you can't turn as quickly, unless you're a professional rugby player. If you're tentative at all, don't use both your feet, use one foot. Decide where you're going, and then go forward. That's being careful, and it's a product of knowledge. In other words, the more you know, the wiser decisions you'll make. At least that's the idea. And the opposite of that, verse 3, the foolishness of man subverts his ways, knocks him back. His way is not going to be as clear because he's listening to folly. And his heart rages, verse 3, against the Lord. So a fool gets upset. I'm down this street the third time. I know I've been, you know, and whether this was you when on your bicycle or on your skateboard or on just walking, if you're trying to get, I don't know how many times people come by our bookstore here and they're trying to find 24 Oxford Street or 317 Oxford. Whoever invented the numbers around here wasn't very kind to people who don't live around here. Because here we are in the 500 block. And across the street is the 200 block. And down the way is the nothing block. And then across the Corso, and it starts at 37 and 52. You know, and it's just not numbered kindly to people who are uninformed. And the more you are in a hurry, we had a woman stop by this morning who was very much in a hurry to get to a particular appointment at whatever the number was on Oxford Street, and she couldn't find it. And she was downright angry. Well, that makes sense. At whom was she angry? It was kind of a universal anger. Luckily, she wasn't mad at us. But she was raging in her mind and in her being. So angry. And you could just feel it. And I felt for her, and we tried to help her, and we got her down the path, and everything's good. And I think she'll probably have made it in time for her appointment. But she didn't expect that at that moment. She'd been back and forth and couldn't find it. When your way is subverted, your heart rages, even if your mouth doesn't. Your heart's raging. Well, verse 4, wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend. In other words, the poor man only has one friend, and that may be a true friend. But wealth, which is a mockery anyway, we'll see that in chapter 23, makes itself wings and flies away, adds many alleged friends, we could say. People who really aren't, but yeah, sure. So who wants to be a millionaire? A lot of the people who hang around those who become rich. And it doesn't mean that they really want to hang out with the person, but they want to hang around with the dollars. Well, that's clever, but that's not going to cut it. No wonder verse 5, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. There's a notion of lying and riches that go together because people lie to hang out with rich people. And a false witness telling an untruth to get to the friendship of the wealthy person will not go unpunished. Verse 6, many will entreat the favor of a generous man, and every man is a friend to him who gives gifts. Whoever wants to give things, yeah, I'll be your buddy. And that's not real friendship. A real friend sticks closer than a brother. A real friend is somebody who's there through thick or thin. Verse 7, all the brothers of a poor man hate him. That doesn't really mean they hate him. You know what I mean? It just means they don't want to hang out with him. Because if you're dealing with money, then lack of money is the root of all disfellowship. It's not true that poor people have brothers who despise them. You look at early Australian history, the pioneers who came here, whether on First Fleet without their freedom, or those who came subsequently and came to free states or came in a state of freedom, it wasn't easy to survive here, much less succeed. I can't imagine the difficulty of pioneering in cruel and dry territory like we have. And there are lots of poor people. And I don't think every poor person has brothers who hate him. I think he's using this in comparison of those who entreat the favor of poor and entreat the favor of rich. And poor people can't do those folks any good. And these are really mock friends. They're not true friends at all. How much more do the friends go far from him? He pursues them with words, but they're gone because they're only interested in his wallet, not in him. How sad. That's just not the kind of people. You don't want friends like that. Fair weather friends, wallet loving friends. It's not just that you treat them to an ice cream cone. Come on, let's go to Macca's. I'll spring the 30 cents. It's not that so much as it's a person who seems to always have, and there's a, how should we call it? There's like a momentum around a wealthy person who attracts certain people, and then more people are attracted not to the rich man, but to the people around the rich man, so that they will gain some kind of honor, success, fame, wealth maybe, but certainly notoriety, camaraderie. And honestly, what are they really looking for but recognition from God more than from any human? Verse 8 then stands in contrast. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding, yeah, you'll find good. You don't have to go find Donald Trump. You don't have to go find Frank Lowy. And I'm sure both of those men are proper and good, and I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying they're the wealthiest guys around, the Saudi prince, the crown prince. I don't think we need to go hang out with him. I hear stories of people who have indentured themselves to work in Dubai among certain ships or in hotels or whatnot because the people who leave tips in these five, count them, six-star hotels, the only six-star hotel in the world is in Dubai. Didn't even know they had that. When I was a kid, there were just 4 stars. Now then they moved it up to 5. Now there's a 6-star. And I think some people indenture sell themselves out to be slaves or go work for a year, if you will, because they want to be around all that free-flowing cash and to make as much as you can, to gain as much from that, and maybe to meet up with somebody who will give you another career or another job another year or 2 or 5 years on. But if you want to keep your own soul, you seek wisdom, and you get understanding. That is good. And if you keep understanding, verse 8, you find good. We talked about it last week or before that said whoever finds a wife finds a good thing, finds good. That's the same word here. And that is what we want. We want to find the good. I guess that's probably the way I try to live. I want to find the good thing in other people. I want to find the good thing in the Bible. I want to find the good thing in my own spiritual walk and in your spiritual walk. I want to help you find it, and I want to help everybody find the good. Sometimes I have to expose the bad to find the good. So I have to confront people with their sin, which is never popular. But there you go. We read earlier, he who wins souls is what? Is wise. He who wins souls is wise. And the way to win a soul is to tell a soul that they're unwon. In other words, that they're lost. And they have to become one. That's W-O-N, not O-N-E. And that is confrontational. The way to get forgiven of sins is to say, you have sins. You need to be forgiven. Wow. That's not exactly niceness. But it is the way you find good, is to sometimes show people the bad. Because if you get corrected in your badness, then what are you going to find? If you amend your way, you're going to find good. And which would I rather have? When Adam and Eve were in the garden, and in front of them dangled Satan a fruit, a forbidden fruit, has God really said you can't eat from the garden, from the tree, from any tree? Well, said Eve, off put and off balance, from any tree we can, but not from that tree. No, 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 we can't. No, you're not going to die, he says. Cool. She already knew good. All he promised her was evil. That's all he promised. Wow, there's a bargain. But in order to find good again, we have to acknowledge our evil. That's how we have to find it, I think. Verse 9 tells us that the one who tells lies will perish. And truth now comes to the fore. There's this notion of the king. There's this foolish son. I guess we should hit that in verse 13. A foolish son is destruction to his father. And the contentions of a wife are a drip, 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 steady dripping. Oy, who needs that? We had, until just recently at our home in Lane Cove, we had a steady drip. There was one little hole that had eroded and become a little larger hole in our roof. And though somebody thought they'd patched it, at the lower end, they hadn't really fixed the hole up in the middle of the roof. So it dripped down into the ceiling above our living room, lounge room, and then came dripping out in the hallway and out over the little porch. How annoying it was. There'd be any rain like we had today, just beautiful rain, and it would come down gorgeous, clear the street. I love the feel of the street when the white rains wash the leaves and wash everything. There's that little fog mist that comes up off the street. Those are nice. And then I would go to my house and I'd walk in and there'd be this drip, drip, and it's so annoying. So then you put a bucket underneath and what do you get? Drip, boink. Drip, boing, drip, you get both, you know, and it slowly fills up and then you dump it. But I'm just saying that that's an annoying drip. They call that in certain, was it Chinese? They call that Chinese water torture, when they would drip that on a prisoner. And it is. You'd think, oh, it'd be refreshing, get a little water. But it's not. It was actually Chinese water torture, the steady drip. And that's, I don't think they learned that from the Bible, but they learned it from reality. And that's what a wife who is contentious is like. What's contentious? What does that mean? Always disagreeable. It's a person who you could say, hey, today's Thursday. They'd say, yeah, well, but no, it isn't. Not somewhere. Somewhere it's all still Wednesday. What's the point of that? But there are some people who are always so right that they have to show you that you're wrong, even if they agree with you. No. The Rabideaus will win the premiership this year. And that's what they'll say. And you can say, well, I don't know. The record shows, you don't know anything. They're coming back. They're going to do it. It doesn't matter what you say to the, it destroys his father. How does that happen? What does that mean? The foolish son is destruction to his father. It destroys the father's name. Yeah. And more so in Judaism than even in today's world. Today, my son and I and my father all share the same last name, but there are lots of people with the same last name. But in Judaism, I'm Reuven ben Eliyahu. I'm the son of my father. And there's only one Reuven ben Eliyahu hanging around Kansas City when I was a kid. And there's only one Nathanel ben Reuven ben Aharon, my son, who's the son of me, who's the son of my father. So I think you're right. It destroys the reputation and the good name that the father is. So it's very important that you know that what you do impacts a lot of things. Some people say it doesn't really matter what you do as long as you don't hurt anybody. But when you do wrong, you do hurt somebody. You hurt yourself, according to the Bible, over and over. At the end of the text in today's reading, we see from verse 18, discipline your son while there is hope. I like that. While there's still time, and don't desire his death. And that's going to happen when you hear the father say, I could kill that kid. But you don't really desire his death. You're just so upset. What are you upset about as a daddy when you say things like that? That he broke the rules, that he broke your rules. He's going out, he's going to be a singer, he's not going to be a chazan. Yeah, don't desire his death. Look, you're not going to kill the kid, but discipline your son while there's still hope. But while there is a tikva that's still ticking, while there's still something that could be amended, go ahead and discipline him. Go ahead and help him to see that he can't get away with everything. Amend his way so that he amends his own in due course. And that might mean when you're 2 years old, you get a pachin tuchus, and it might be when you're 15 that you get grounded, and it might mean when you're 18 that you get erased off of the car insurance and you don't get to drive for 6 months. And it might mean any number of things, but it's definitely taking away privilege or some kind of knockback so that you are improved. I think that's the point. Look with me at Hebrews chapter 12. And in verse 1, we talk about this community of faith from chapter 11. Since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, that's the hall of faith. From Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and all the great people of faith from before. Let us also lay aside every encumbrance and lay aside the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us. We've got a long way to go. We've got a marathon. We don't have a sprint. And let's fix our eyes on Yeshua. He's the author. He's that began it. He's the perfecter. That means he's going to conclude it. Our faith. Who for the joy set before him endured the cross. The joy set before Yeshua was our perfection. He despised the shame and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. That sitting down is a symbol of completing his work. Verse 3, for consider him, Yeshua, who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. In other words, while you're doing this long race and you get a little weary and tired and you're at the 13-mile mark or the 26-kilometer mark, and you say, oh, yes, this is going on forever. I'll never make it. No. Consider Yeshua so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. But you haven't even resisted, verse 4, to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you've forgotten, silly Hebrews, the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, Don't regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you're reproved by him. For whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges, that's whips or potches, every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as sons, for what son is there whom his father doesn't discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you're illegitimate children and not really sons. For we all had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? Look, they disciplined us for a short time. It seemed best to them. But he disciplines us, not a time frame now, for our good, that we may share in his holiness. Amplify that the more that it comes to you. All discipline for the moment seems crummy, we could say, seems not to be joyful, feels horrible. Why do they do this to me? But sorrowful. Yet to those who've been trained by discipline, afterward, at the end of it, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. So what the writer of Hebrews is saying is the same thing that Solomon is saying. If you love your kid, you're going to discipline him so that he will be improved, so that he won't mess up. Yeah, it seems pretty crummy at the moment, but it's going to produce an eternal weight of glory. It's going to produce something really positive and healthy. Everybody goes through discipline. Nobody likes it. I mean, we look at the guys who work in Darwin or in our armed forces. We watch Prince Harry and Prince William as they went to this war and that, and we're proud of them, and they've gone through military training. We think that's excellent. They probably didn't feel it was excellent. They probably felt, oh, man, can you imagine going through Duntroon, and you're kind of a hamburger-eating, chips-eating, a little overweight fellow, and you think, well, maybe at the end of year 12, I'll go to Duntroon. Maybe I'll try out to be an officer. So there you are, and you're losing 3 or 4 kilos a week, and you are in pain because they're making you carry a backpack of 16 stone of 16 stone or something, and you're going nuts. Well, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful but sorrowful. Yet to those who've been trained by it, it's going to produce the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Well, that's exactly Solomonic, isn't it? Discipline your son while there's still hope. And again, in verse number 20, listen to counsel and accept discipline that you may be wise the rest of your days. The sooner you learn that somebody knows more than you about how to live your life and you take it on board, you're going to be better. You're going to be a better person for it, better man, better woman. And that's the way to go. I used to have chapter 19, verse 27 at the biggest point in my Bible. It was the largest reference that I've written at the front of my Bible, a Bible I lost about 20 years ago. But for the first 15 years of my walk with the Lord, it was giant. Proverbs 19:27: cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. That was like the most important text for me for 15 years. So I chose not to cease listening, but to keep listening. Shema, keep listening, my son, to discipline, and you will not stray. See, listen, you don't stray. Don't listen, you will stray. How simple is that? It's simple enough that I could take it on board. Simple enough that I could sort it out. Simple enough that I can hear it, but not so simple that I can do it. Verse 20, listen to counsel. There it is. Shema. Listen. The same word we use in the Shema. To hear, O Israel, about the Lord being one. So here he says, listen to counsel. Accept discipline. You'll be wise the rest of your days. This is going to connect. It's going to produce. It's going to make things happen. And if you, verse 27, cease listening, then you will stray. I like the word in verse 28, a rascally witness. My daughter watched and recorded the movie today, The Young Rascals. The Little Rascals, I think it was called. Little Rascals. When I was a kid, they were called Spanky and Our Gang. And they were so much fun. And these guys were the defining of the word rascal. They're just clever and cute and always trying to do something a little over the edge and a little out of bounds. But it wasn't that they were trying to do wrong like a Dennis the Menace. They just did what boys will be boys and do. A rascally witness makes a mockery of justice. Okay, so remember, the whole point is not to just live long time, but to live abundantly. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? That's what God wants for us. So if we listen to counsel, we'll accept discipline, we'll be better, and we'll give praise to God. That's what I wanted to say.
Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.